I had a perfectly good sermon written this morning based on one of today's readings, but life has a way of intervening, and so you get this sermon instead. When you think about the grace of God, what do you think of? I suspect that many people think of some rather mystical event or invisible stuff encountered in the sacraments. I thought of it this week when two things happened. First, the Confederate battle flag was removed from the grounds of the state capitol in South Carolina. And second, Pope Francis apologized in Bolivia for the sins of the church in its involvement in the European conquest of the Americas. The first of these, the action taken in South Carolina, resonated with me because I began my ordained ministry in the United States just as the civil rights movement was gaining momentum in the early 1960s. I was on the Selma March, and I remember that when we got to the state capitol building in Montgomery, there were two flags over the Capitol Dome, the Alabama state flag and the Confederate battle flag. We heard rumors that there was a U.S. flag on a flagpole somewhere around the side of the building, but I never saw it. The Confederate flag was put above the Capitol Dome in Alabama in 1961 in commemoration of the centennial of the beginning of the American Civil War, but also as a protest against the civil rights movement. It was put above the Capitol Dome in South Carolina at the same time for the same reason. In Alabama, the Confederate flag remained there until 1993, when a court enforced a state law that permitted only the national and state flags to fly over the dome. In South Carolina, as we now know, the Confederate flag was removed from the Capitol Dome in the year 2000, but placed near a Confederate monument on the Capitol grounds, from which it was only finally removed last Friday. The second action this week that especially struck me was the apology of Pope Francis for the sins of the church during the European conquest of the Americas. This is not the first apology that the Pope Francis has made for the sins of the church, only the most recent. His apologies have been of particular interest to me, for I have felt for years that the church needs to do two things if it is to have any integrity and if it is eventually to gain or regain the trust of people outside the church. One is to make clear that our commitment as Christians is to the truth and not just to some theological party line. The other is, while not ignoring the good that has been done by the church, nonetheless to admit quite honestly to ourselves and to others the evil that has been done and the damage that has been done to people by the church. And here is Pope Francis apologizing for ills done by the church in the conquest of the Americas. In the same way, in 1993, Archbishop Michael Pearce apologized to the First Nations for the Anglican Church's involvement in the residential schools. I speak of these two things this morning, the events in South Carolina and the apologies in Bolivia, not just as my current events report, but because these are rare instances of communities beginning to come to terms with the realities of their own histories. Think back to the sort of history you were taught in school. I get the impression that things are a little more realistic nowadays. But when I was in school, somewhere around the end of the 13th century, or so it feels, history was always taught as the glorious history of us. Those other guys' history was always a bit dicey, but ours was, by and large, something to be pretty proud of. We can always own up to small flaws. Sometimes they are even endearing. But major flaws, that's something else. Why are the histories of human communities almost always unbroken strings of successes, overcoming of hardships, triumphing over adversaries, and all while being paragons of all virtue and exemplars for the rest of the human race? I think it has something to do with the basic human need to feel safe. All human beings feel unsafe at times. Life for everyone is always slightly precarious. And so we band together. Tribalism is a basic survival mechanism for human beings. We run in packs. We didn't defeat the saber-toothed tiger because we were bigger or tougher or faster. We beat them because we ganged up on them. But the major thing that endangers us and makes us nervous is not saber-toothed tigers or even earthquakes and tornadoes. It is other human beings. And so we band together in families, in tribes, in nations, in religions, for protection from other families, tribes, nations, and religions. But we want not only physical protection of the tribe, we also want to be assured that we are good and wise and wonderful. And so we develop selective memories, drawing together the mythologies of our histories to show that we have been the best. And even if we have had defeats that we can't manage to ignore, at least we were magnificent in defeat, honorable, brave, and true. Religions seem to have a particular problem in this respect. They seem to have a need to convince not only other people, but also themselves, that they are in fact almost perfect, possessed of the absolute truth, highly moral, and certainly better than any of the other religions. Christianity, especially in its more organized forms, is no exception. All of which is what makes this past week for me so exceptional. The American South is the only part of the United States that has suffered defeat in war and military occupation, and that at the hands of those with whom it has had to live in the same country. It is natural that many Southerners have clung to the magnificent in defeat picture of their history. The Confederate battle flag has for many been the symbol of that self-understanding, even while for many others it has become a symbol of white supremacy and of slavery, and has often been used in recent times to send exactly that message. Its removal from the state capitol grounds in South Carolina is one small step in coming to terms with the dark side of Southern history. But what made that possible? Many things. But there is one thing which the governor of South Carolina cited, as did other leaders of the debate in the legislature: an unexpected and almost unbelievable moment in the tragedy of the death of 9 people in a church in Charleston. When the shooter was arraigned in court, many of the families of the people whom he had killed forgave him. They did not have to do that. No one would have expected that of them, but they did. They weren't asking the court to excuse the killer from the consequences of his action, but they were not going to be trapped in the hatred and despair that so often absorb those who cannot forgive. I cannot myself imagine how they were able to do it, but they did. Had they spewed out hatred in the courtroom or even said nothing, I believe that the Confederate flag would still be flying on the Capitol grounds. But because of that incredible, gracious act, others were enabled to take a small step toward the healing of societal wounds that have festered for 150 years. And in the same week, the leader of the largest branch of the Christian church admitted publicly that the church, and it was not just his branch of the church, was a contributor to the colonial agony of the native peoples of the Americas. In the same way, Canadians have begun to grapple with our own convoluted history through such means as the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Words, some will say, words mean little. And often that is so. But not in the case of the Pope's apology. We in the church do have a very convoluted history, many things of which we can be immensely proud, but many things also extremely damaging to people. But there has always been a tendency in the church to recognize that individual members of the church can sometimes be sinful and brutal, but to believe that the church itself, the body of Christ, cannot be. The Pope's apology, coming from the head of that branch of the church most likely to fall into that trap, makes such an illusion no longer tenable. Whatever else we may have to say about the church and about Christianity in the future, no one will be able to ignore the reality of our own dark history. It is immensely sad that our history carries that darkness, but the first step in moving away from it is to recognize and admit that it is there. We 21st century sophisticates have gotten out of the biblical habit of looking for God at work in the real world, in history, and in politics. But these two events, I believe we have seen in them what the grace of God looks like in concrete, real-world terms. I have said before, and in fact I think I said it here just a couple of weeks ago, that I am one of those for whom not only is the glass half empty, but the water left in it is probably polluted. But this week, I found a glass that was full to the brim, and the water in it was unbelievably sweet.